It's Legal Defense with Kirk and Casey on 1330 WHBL.
Good morning and welcome to Legal Defense. I'm Casey Hoff.
And I'm Kirk O'Beare. Oh, it's getting ready for the big holiday season right around the corner, Casey.
It is. We're getting close. Kirk, let's start off by talking about Duck Dynasty. Are you aware of this show?
All I know about Duck Dynasty is that when I'm at the supermarket, there's some sort of T-shirts or hats or something you can buy that has men with beards. And first I thought it was just ZZ Top, but yes, Apparently it's a show.
Well, this is a show on A&E, and it's sort of a reality show about, you know, duck calling accessories and such and things like that. And these guys, you know, I mean, they do appear to be authentic. Now, I know a lot of these reality shows are not that authentic, and that's
really
no surprise to most people.
That's,
right.
Then they're not reality shows.
They're not really reality shows. But the patriarch, as he's being called, of Duck Dynasty, named Phil Robertson.
And I'm sure he doesn't know what that word means, but anyway,
well, perhaps not. He has been suspended after he made controversial remarks about gays and about African Americans in a magazine interview. Now, this according to the Associated Press, he told the interviewer that he never saw, quote, the mistreatment of any black person, end quote, during his 67 years living in the South. This was in the January issue of GQ magazine. And he says also in that magazine that homosexuality is a sin, and he puts it in the same category as bestiality and promiscuity. And I can't exactly quote what he says word for word because I don't think it would pass muster.
The FCC would not appreciate it.
They would not appreciate
said
it.
Quote.
But let's just say he makes references to general parts of bodies and such and says, how can you possibly be interested in that sort of thing? I'm paraphrasing here. But he says, you start with homosexual behavior and just morph out from there. Bestiality, sleeping around with this woman and that woman and that woman and those men. And so he talks about adulterers and male prostitutes, and he calls them homosexual offenders, the greedy, the drunkards, the slanders, the swindlers. They won't inherit the kingdom of God. Now, he also made
So why is that news? I've heard that before.
Well, you've heard it.
From a lot of people.
But this is a very popular show with approximately 14 million viewers per week and extremely controversial. But he also says, by living in the South, I thought this was very weird. He says, and I quote, I never with my eyes saw the mistreatment of any black person, not once. Where we lived was all farmers. He says, and I quote, the blacks worked for the farmers. I hoed the cotton with them. I'm with the blacks because we're white trash. We're going across the field. They're singing and happy. I never heard one black person say, I tell you what, those doggone white people, not a word.
So he's ignorant and he's exclaiming such.
He says, pre-entitlement, pre-welfare, you say, were they happy? They were godly. They were happy. No one was singing the blues. This is the kind of stuff I thought the blues came from, actually.
I think he's completely backwards on that.
He doesn't exactly know what's going on here. So there have been calls. The reason I tie this into our show is because there have been calls that his First Amendment rights have been violated. And this is a complete misunderstanding of the First Amendment. I mean, a complete and total. And this comes up every time somebody makes a controversial remark. If they're suspended as a result, well, their First Amendment rights are violated. First of all, A&E is not a government entity. They're not telling him that he can't speak his mind.
Well, wait. They're regulated by the government, though, as is any television or radio station.
Right. Yes, but they are not the government themselves. So I don't see how this rises to the level of a First Amendment violation. They're simply saying, like any other company would, we don't agree with your comments. We don't think it's good for our business. And therefore, we're going to suspend you.
And you think that's fine?
Well, I'm not saying whether it's not up to me. That's the point. And it's not a violation of his First Amendment rights. He has the right to say what he wants. That's true within limits. But A&E, as a privately held corporation, has the right to fire him or to suspend him
sort of
if
like
they want
the
to.
The way the country club can keep certain people of various ethnicities out.
Oh, stop it. Yeah. No, first of all, they weren't trying to keep him out based on the color of his skin.
They fired him because of what he said.
They fired him because of what he said, but not because of race, color, class, creed. Now, it's things he said about race, but not his race in particular.
Well, don't you think that he represents the company as he's on a show that A&E theoretically, I assume, hired him to do as a reality actor, so to speak?
Yes.
And if he is saying these things, especially outside the context of the show, because A&E could cut that stuff. If he said it during the show, they could just get rid of it.
He said it during an interview.
I know. That's what I'm saying, is that during an interview where he is, he's the only reason he's participating in this interview, incidentally, is because he's the Duck Dynasty patriarch.
Well, wait a minute. Look what happened with Tiger Woods, right? He went out and, you know, he was philandering around with different women, right? And he had all kinds of endorsement deals from private
Nike
corporations.
And
he wasn't
so forth.
He wasn't doing this on the golf course. He wasn't doing this on
television. As far as we know.
He was doing it off the golf course, and yet he was, many companies cut ties with him. Now, his right to engage in the behavior that he wants to engage in was not infringed. He simply chose to behave in a certain way. And
so you're saying
his sponsors reacted in
his method of however he used his putter was not any business of Nike.
Right, exactly.
Because as long as it wasn't illegal.
Yes.
If it was a 3-putt or a 4-putt, we call them.
Doesn't matter if
it was a bogey
or
whatever it was.
It doesn't matter if it was whatever it was, a driver, a 9-iron, whatever.
Trying to whack himself out of a sand trap.
Yes.
Whatever the case may be.
Yes, exactly. All right. Well, now that we're on to all this fun stuff. But, you know, I just think that, and yes, Kirk, you're right. Sarah Palin now has come out and said that essentially his free speech rights were violated. And so she's very, very angry with this. Yeah, she said, actually, she wrote that free speech is an endangered species. That was her quote.
I'm not surprised that quote comes from. In fact, if you had just said that and said, Kirk, I want you to guess who made this quote. She'd be in my top two.
She's your top one right now. She's actually said it. So I just find this. First of all, you know how big I am on the First Amendment.
First Amendment is your middle name. Around the office, we call him Casey First Amendment Hoff.
Exactly. I absolutely support this guy's right to say stupid and dumb and ignorant things, which is what he said. I mean, this is really ignorant stuff. At the same time, I also support the right of A&E, if they feel it's in the best interest of their company and the face of their organization, to say, you know what, we don't really want to associate ourselves with that kind of stuff. It would be the same thing if you had somebody who is making, I mean, many people consider the remarks that he made to be racist.
And I would.
And I think they are racist because he's talking about, excuse me, he's talking about how African Americans had it much better before there were laws about equal rights. I mean, he's talking about how they were happy and singing. Right. And this may, I mean, that is the ultimate. I mean, that's so offensive in so many different ways to so many people. And yes, he has the right to say stupid and dumb and ignorant things. But to me, I'm outraged that anybody in 21st century America would still think like that.
Right.
Would still think like that. Yeah. I mean, it's just sickening to me.
But it sounds like what you're most upset about is, in addition to the wrongfulness of his comments and whatever is inspiring this, whether it's to brew controversy or whether it's to, maybe he's playing the role of the character, as you said, he plays himself on the show, I guess. But on top of that, it sounds like you're a little peeved with the fact that America, or some people in America, connect that with some sort of First Amendment entitlement, and then we've got this problem with private companies and what they can do in response to it.
It's a complete misunderstanding.
Well, let's break that down, because the rule is, the law is, that if someone has protected speech, and protected speech by definition is usually speech that somebody doesn't like. That's the definition of, and it's especially applicable when it comes to speech directed at or in some way influenced by the government or governmental policy. So it's perfectly legitimate, I suppose, under the First Amendment that, especially when someone is commenting on American society and his view of it, albeit one that we disagree with, one that he's entitled to say. Now, it's interesting because, yes, A&E is a private employer. A&E is a private company. They're not part of the government. But like any employer, if there's conduct, even if not criminal or even if not violative of the law, can in fact be a basis for discharge, so to speak. And one example of that, let's say the office policy here is to wear a green tie. Now, if we were in the office right now, you would be complying with that policy because you're wearing a green tie.
Right, exactly.
But if you wore a red tie and I said, Mr. Hoff, you know very well that the office policy is a red tie as a green tie. You're on warning. You better wear a red tie tomorrow. And then tomorrow, or green tie. I'm getting my green ties and red ties mixed. Right. It's too close to Christmas. See, I'm
it
just
is.
Getting the green and the red mixed up. But let's say you flaunt the policy. You do something that you know is against the company's policy. Since we're a private company, you're out of here, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
What if you were making a statement in opposition to the policy by violating it?
Well, same thing.
Same thing.
Yes.
Isn't that what we do, though, when we're exercising our free speech rights as a statement against...
Yes, but again, we're talking about things that would protect you, for example, from going in the public square, wherever that is. You know, they always talk about the public square, and you always imagine...
Marching up
things.
And down the square.
Right. And you can't be, for example, arrested... for making a statement like that. All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Legal Defense with Kirk and Casey. Be back in just a moment.
To Legal Defense with Kirk and Casey on 1330 WHBL.
And welcome back to Legal Defense. I'm Casey.
And I'm Kirk. Just one more point about what we were talking about before the break, this Duck Dynasty nonsense. And I say nonsense just because it's silly that we're even talking about it. Someone who has media attention because they make a show about guys with beards that make duck calls for whatever reason. You know, I heard a comedian not too long ago say, eventually they're going to make reality shows about people watching reality shows. Because they're going to run out of stuff.
That's a good idea.
That'd be a great idea. We'd be people's reactions to the reality shows.
Right.
It could be endless. It'd be like looking in a double mirror if you, you know.
Well, they actually already do
on.
That. On a lot of these shows, they do like show the after show, they call them.
Yeah,
and they do a show about the show.
Yeah, that's stupid. Anyway, the only other point I wanted to make about this whole thing about Mr. What's his name again? Mr. Duck Dynasty saying these
Bill.
Silly things. And they're worse than silly. They're hurtful and they're harmful. And here's the problem I have with it. The intention behind it, when someone says that kind of thing, and here's what really gets my goat about it. Let's put the First Amendment aside for a second. And I know he has the right to say these things, and I support that. But here's what bothers me, and here's what really calls into question how something like the First Amendment should apply to this situation. What this individual is doing, because he has the spotlight on him, there's a microphone presumably in front of his face, he's giving an interview, and the only reason they even care about him is because he's on a reality TV show. And he uses that opportunity to say something that is not only not true, and people say things that are not true all the time, but it's directed at against one of the most harmful and despicable things that this country ever did to other human beings. And we spent 300 years enslaving an entire race of people against their will, and we've hardly begun to make up for it. And for someone to inject this type of nonsense into the discussion, first of all, what is his point, other than that he's a complete idiot? But secondly, what about acknowledging the fact for our children and our grandchildren that we have done harm to a race of people that we have not even begun to make up for? It'll take hundreds of years before our society is truly colorblind, and each of us have a responsibility every day to make sure that we perpetuate the goal of equality in society, in jobs, and I mean in discussions, and just common mutual respect for other human beings. And this type of comment, I understand he's entitled to do it under the First Amendment and so forth, but I'm entitled to say on the radio, like I am right now, this guy is a jerk.
Well, and to say that, you know, years ago when we had Jim Crow laws in this country, that African Americans were happier, is one of the dumbest things you could ever say. I mean, it's just, it's completely ignorant. Happier when you're not treated equally, happier when you have to use separate restrooms, happier when you can't even go to certain restaurants and you have to sit on the back of the bus. Come on, this is just silliness.
Not only is it obviously incorrect, but it's more offensive when it's coming from a white man with a big beard who's trying to be a hillbilly, you know,
right,
in the public eye.
Absolutely.
Have you seen 12 Years a Slave?
No.
You should. It was one of those movies. It's a long movie. It's 2.5 hours, I think. And I rarely go to see movies in the theater anymore, but I did. And it was one of those movies you walk out of it and you just can't believe that it's based on a true story. It is. It's based on a completely true story. And it's one of those movies that I think every high school student should watch. I mean, there's some terrible violence and some unbelievably inhumane treatment.
Well,
it's reality. That's reality.
Think about Jackie Robinson. Would he have been happier? I mean, it was in his contract that when the fans spit on him, that essentially he had to deal with that. I mean, it's so mind-boggling, I can't even believe it. But let's move on to another story, Kirk. This is about Mark Jensen. This is a story about a 2008 trial from a 1998 event that involved Mark Jensen, who allegedly killed his wife, Julie, and was ultimately convicted of that.
Isn't this the case where he mistook her for a 78 Buick and he put antifreeze in her?
There was antifreeze apparently involved, and that was not even in dispute, by the way.
Oh, right.
The antifreeze was the issue was whether she took the antifreeze herself to commit suicide,
right,
or whether he had something to do with that. And that was really what it all came down to. However, there was this note that was left, and,
right,
and it was called, they termed it the voice from the grave note. That's really what it was referred to. And it was written by Julie Jensen, the deceased, and given to her neighbors, and she told the neighbors that if anything should happen to her, that they should give it to police. And in that note, it basically stated that
if she were to die, my husband did it.
It says, I took this picture, and I'm writing this on Saturday, and I'll just go on. This list was in my husband's business daily planner, not meant for me to see. I don't know what it means, but if anything happens to me, he would be my first suspect. Our relationship has deteriorated to the polite superficial. I know he's never forgiven me for the brief affair I had with that creep 7 years ago. And it goes on to say, I would never take my life because of my kids. They're everything to me. And it says more than that. But they allowed, ultimately, this was litigated, and the judge allowed this note into evidence. And the argument at the time was, hey, how do we cross-examine a note?
Right.
We didn't have the right to cross-examine this person.
Well, let's break that down, because it's an interesting legal subject when it comes down to, we do have evidence that we sometimes term the voice from the grave, or the voice as you're about to go to the grave. The dying declaration. And that actually is a rule of evidence. It's a bit outdated because it's based on the idea that in a God-fearing society, no matter what your religion is, that if all people believe in a maker and that you're going to meet your maker, and the last thing that you say is not going to be a lie, because then you have no opportunity to cleanse your soul of the lie that you're committing. So therefore, the last words out of your mouth are deemed to be, you know, holy or something like that. So
this is a very antiquated rule.
It is, but it is still a rule that's on the books that is applied. Now, the problem with this note is that you're right. You can't cross-examine a note. And here's the big problem. It occurs to me, and I knew about this case when it was going on, and I thought right away, in fact, instantly, when I heard about this note, that she committed suicide, and she wrote this note just to mess with her husband. That's what I thought.
Right.
That's what it looked like to me.
And that was essentially the defense.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I think is what happened, as a matter of fact. I think that's the truth. I think that is what happened, based on my knowledge of the case and following it and everything. But as it relates to the rule of evidence, that's one reason why, if you have multiple or alternative explanations for something, that's supposed to be brought out through cross-examination and the ability to present the evidence by questions and answers, and then cross-examine or, as we say in the law, to impeach.
But the judge at the trial court level said essentially, hey, This is a dying declaration, and if it isn't, and somebody can get around that rule by killing the person...
Well, that's called the rule of forfeiture.
Yes.
And what that means is that you have no right to object to your inability to cross-examine somebody and thereby keep the evidence out if you're the one that killed the witness.
Right.
That's the idea.
Right, right.
So you're forfeiting any sort of Sixth Amendment right you have.
And the Court of Appeals took this case in Wisconsin. Supreme Court denied to review this case. And then it was brought up into the federal courts on a habeas petition, a habeas corpus petition, which is we've talked about this before, but it's basically your last resort, your last hope. And Judge Griesbach from the Eastern District of Wisconsin wrote a decision in order, and he granted the petition, and he said that Mark Jensen is to be released within 90 days unless the state decides to retry him, but they're going to have to retry him without this note this time. The Court of Appeals, in denying this, essentially said, hey, you know, even without the note, there's still enough evidence here.
Yeah, they applied a harmless error.
Harmless error. And the note was, by all accounts, at least what I've heard about this case, was a huge part of the case.
I would imagine.
A huge part of the case.
I mean, if it is what they say it is, and if it was litigated that hotly, I imagine it probably was a feature of the prosecution.
Right.
I mean, it contains motive. It contains, you know, an accusation from a dead person. It completely defeats the theory of defense that she did it herself. I think it is a big deal. When you say harmless error, and this is another thing that courts do, the Court of Appeals sometimes will look at the evidence and say, oh yeah, even though the judge was wrong for letting this particular prejudicial evidence in, we can't imagine that it really affected the jury in any way, which is so weird because when you have a trial, the rules of evidence are there to make sure that the good stuff or the proper stuff comes in and the improper stuff stays out.
Right.
And if you're just Monday morning quarterbacking it and saying, we think we're pretty darn sure that
the jury wouldn't have
a different opinion. And even if there was overwhelming evidence of the person's guilt, you have no idea. We can't go into the jury room and listen to deliberations and see what was important. For all we know, all 12 jurors thought that note was the reason why they had to vote guilty. But, of course, the Court of Appeals, which is really... it's not like it's a courtroom. I mean, there is a courtroom that they hear oral arguments in, but that's at the Capitol. And it's not like a court like you can go downtown Sheboygan or Milwaukee and walk into a courtroom and there's a judge there holding court. It doesn't work like that. It's mostly paperwork and a lot of people staying up late at night with their reading glasses and highlighters. You know, that's the life of a Court of Appeals judge or clerk, you know. So it's all this sort of, well, how can we salvage this conviction since we know that even if there was a problem here, well, let's just hypothesize that the jury still could have convicted him. Now, how is that justice?
Well, it's I don't think it is. And Mark Jensen could likely be a free man in short order. So we have to take another break. You're listening to Legal Defense with Kirk and Casey. We'll be back in just a moment.
It's Legal Defense with Kirk and Casey on 1330 WHBL.
And welcome back to Legal Defense. I'm Casey Hoff.
And I'm Kirk O'Bear. You notice we do the same thing? We just have this pattern.
First,
we introduce ourselves with our full names.
Yes.
Then after the first break, we just use our first name.
That's right.
And then on the presumption that people may have forgotten what our last names are, on the third time around, we spell it all out for them.
Or if they just tune in at the half point of the show.
That could be. So. Or if it just so happens that you're tuning in for the first time ever in the course of 3 years that we've been on the air. By the way, it's been over 3 years now.
Wow.
That's hard to believe.
Wow,
isn't it?
Is hard to believe.
Yeah, time just flies.
It does. It's good to have structure, though, Kirk.
That's, it is, but I can tell you this. The hour flies by when I'm in the good company of my friend Casey Hall.
Absolutely. I agree with you, Kirk, and then the same to you. Now, Kirk, there is a state senator who's considering running for the United States House of Representatives seat, and one of the gentlemen is retiring. And this particular state senator, his name is Dick Black. He's from Virginia. and he was forming an exploratory committee.
You mean Dick now, Black of the Virginia Dick Blacks?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes. And when Black was a state delegate, he made a speech saying that he, quote, did not know how on earth you could validly get a conviction of a husband-wife rape. And there's actually a video of this.
Of him saying this.
Yes. So you can imagine that this is going to be used on all kinds of
some people should just
venues.
Not open their mouths. If they plan on running for office, and especially when they are running for office, and they're out there talking about stuff, they should just shut up.
It's very hard for some people. And Kirk, it gets even more outrageous than that. He says, this is a full quote, I do not know how on earth you can validly get a conviction of a husband-wife rape where they are living together, sleeping in the same bed, she's in a nighty, and so forth. There is no injury, no separation, or anything. Now, let's talk about that for a second, because she's in a nighty? What exactly does that have to do with anything?
What's the point of this discussion? Why was he being asked? Hey, what's your opinion on whether or not a married woman could be raped or not?
No, this is from 2002.
Oh, I see.
This is from 2002. He was debating some type of bill on the floor, and this was his position on spousal rape. And you and I deal with, you know, sexual assault allegations in terms of representing clients all the time. And part of that involves an analysis as to what goes on. Now, when people think of particular crimes, I think they often have this idea in their head that if it's a robbery, you know, it's a guy who comes in with a mask on and he's got a gun and he's going up to the bank teller, and with the gun he's asking for the money and trying to come
hand
out.
Over all your money.
Right.
Stick him up.
Right. Right. Or if it's some particular it's there's this sort of, I don't want to say comic because it's not funny, but there's sort of a stereotypical image of particular crime in people's heads and what they think it's supposed to be like. And so this guy is saying, hey, well, if the two people are married, how in the world could there ever be a rape? Because he's essentially arguing, I think, that it's always got to be consensual if you've got those marital vows.
That's an interesting perspective because it doesn't match with reality or the law. I know in Wisconsin, husbands or wives, for that matter, I suppose, could be and have been convicted for raping their spouse. We don't call it rape in Wisconsin. It's called sexual assault. But if you have sexual contact with anyone and they don't consent to it, it doesn't matter if you're married to that person or not.
Right. The piece of paper is meaningless.
That doesn't mean anything in relation to the law. So this is, you know, again, ignorance. And what's the point? So they must have been debating whether or not they needed a special provision within the law that addressed spousal rape and that kind of
thing.
This
is really getting you going.
That's just,
I mean, you're just...
You've peppered the show with things that you know are going to get me going.
I've peppered it with very controversial subjects because, hey... We're close to the holiday season.
You probably were giggling when you printed this stuff off. You're like, Kirk's going to get all out of control here.
I'm never giggling. But second of all, I think it's a very interesting topic because I think there are more people than you think, just like in the last topic, who have these views about certain crimes. And I feel like it's part of our responsibility as people who deal with this stuff every day to kind of bring this stuff to light.
Well, I agree with that.
So when it comes to...
So don't be afraid to bring it up.
Oh, I'm not afraid. I'm just explaining my reasoning. You asked if I was sitting, maliciously trying to anchor you, and that would
I'm
never
just
be
paranoid, that's all.
Let me try one more time, though.
Okay. I know you're going to... I saw you giggling when you printed this off. You actually were giggling. I heard you.
No, I was not, because this is also a very serious topic.
Okay.
Although it's about mascots, it's about Native American mascots.
Okay.
And we know that there are lots of very controversial and offensive to Native American mascots, such as the Washington Redskins. I mean, that one really, I don't know how you can much debate that that's not controversial, at least, because I mean, when you're talking about Redskins, that's just the name itself is controversial. So,
well, the name Indian is controversial,
right? I know, and
but
even
that's used.
And actually, even Native American, I believe you're supposed to say American Indian. I believe that's the correct term.
I know
I can't keep up.
The
with
reason
it,
that the it's term. Varied so much is that much like the term African American, there are plenty of people with dark skin in our country that have no roots in Africa whatsoever at any time in their generation, and they're getting lumped in with people that are. But, you know, I think we should just call them Americans. How about that?
Americans.
Just
call everybody Americans.
Yeah.
That would solve the whole issue.
Right.
But I have to, in the context of this story,
And you know what? Where are the Redskins based? Washington, D.C. We could call them the Washington Americans. Wouldn't that be nice?
Go. That would be nice.
Because it's our nation's capital.
I like that. There you go. So Governor Scott Walker signed the controversial Indian mascot bill. That's what it's termed, into law.
Hot on the heels of us deciding that we shouldn't use that word. That's the title of the bill.
Hot off the Capital Times Press. Into law Thursday, but not before informing state tribal leaders in a letter earlier in the day of his impending action. In a letter, Governor Walker stated, "I share many of your concerns about some of the mascots and nicknames used in Wisconsin and across America. If it were up to me personally, I would seek viable alternatives that were not offensive to Native Americans." But the governor detailed his concerns that the previous law, whose provisions are largely rolled back by the new law, infringed on free speech rights. He said if the state bans speech that's offensive to some, where does it stop? A person or person's right to speak does not end just because what they say or how they say it is offensive. The American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin responded, calling Governor Walker's use of the First Amendment to protect the use of race-based mascots bogus. They said that the First Amendment does not allow government programs or government bodies to offend or discriminate through their policies, and school districts count as government bodies.
Can you imagine if the response to somebody that wanted to have a football team named the Sheboygan, you know, fill in the blank with any expletive relating to African Americans? I think we can say N-word. Can we say that? You know what it means, right?
But you're equating this to that.
Could you possibly get away with that? No, absolutely not.
I have to distinguish this.
Predate the Europeans.
I need to talk you off the ledge just a little bit here.
Okay.
First of all, we know about the N-word, and we know how offensive that is, and it is offensive. There's no controversy about that. What about when it comes to names like, I know that there's a mascot in the Madison area called the Wanakee Warriors, okay? It's a Native American mascot, essentially. It's the Wanakee Warriors. You're saying that is the same?
No. I'm not. What I'm complaining about here is that Walker's insistence that he needs to roll back the previous provisions that were designed to, and yet this is what I'm going to say about this, as far as you and I and everybody else in society.
Yeah.
We have a responsibility to move our psychological and social well-being into the future and not into the past. Because one thing that we can do to influence society and make it so our kids and our grandkids, I know I keep talking about our kids and our grandkids, but the point is that
it's because you're a grandpa.
It's true.
Yeah.
But to say that, you know, I don't want to step on the toes of people that want to use racially based mascot names which it comes down to racially offensive and insensitive imagery and words.
Let's talk about the Florida State Seminoles for a second. Because the Florida State Seminoles, and they've done various studies on this, and I'm not quoting exactly the study, but an overwhelming majority, nearing 90%, I believe, 80 or 90% of members of the Seminole tribe liked the Florida State Seminoles mascot.
Seminole is the actual correct name of a tribe,
but it's a native word. Yeah, but it's based on...
It's not Redskin.
Okay, you're saying, you're agreeing with me then that some nicknames based on Native American culture or names are okay, but others are not.
Well,
right?
We should.
You're saying Redskins not okay.
We shouldn't have a blanket policy that says, "Never mind what we said a year ago, where we're going to try and not offend people." Well, forget it. And I'm going to send you a letter ahead of time just to explain why I'm telling you. Well, I'm thumbing my nose in your face. That's the point here.
Well, Kirk's face is getting redder and redder, so we do have to take another break. You're listening to Legal Defense with Kirk and Casey. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Legal Defense with Kirk and Casey on 1330 WHBL.
And welcome back to Legal Defense. I'm Casey.
And I'm Kirk. So this is the last segment. Time really flies, especially when my head is spinning around.
That's right.
Like The Exorcist. Wasn't that the movie where the girl's head actually goes around in circles?
I believe so. I believe you're right.
Special effects of the 70s. But we were talking before the break about this provision in law. And if I understand this correctly, and Casey kind of blew through the story real fast because he knew I was going to get all upset about it. And I'm not upset, but what I want to say is that I believe a year ago, right, that we had a law that went into effect that at least encouraged different municipalities, high schools, and so forth, public high schools anyway, to rename their teams.
It made it easier to do that, yes.
Made it easier to do that.
Right.
And wasn't Marquette University one that did?
Well, no. Well, Marquette's the Golden Eagles now. They used to be the Warriors.
The Warriors.
This was a while ago.
Let me just take a step back, because the term warrior, I don't necessarily have the connotation of it being an Indian or Native American or whatever term we're using now.
Well, but it was certainly based on, you saw Marquette's old logo, right?
But it's when you combine it with the logo, I suppose, that it becomes that. Now, I know I'm going to play devil's advocate with myself here for just a second, but I think the best people or a group of people to ask if it's offensive are the ones who are being portrayed.
Right.
Right? Because that's how you know.
That was the point I was making with the Florida State Seminoles.
Got it. I understand.
Yeah.
And I acknowledge that point.
Okay.
But it also has occurred to me as I've thought about this issue over the years that a lot of these teams are really paying tribute to whatever it is that they're admiring. The fact that you would be in the spirit of a culture that you are saluting in some way.
Yes, like the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, right?
Well, right. No one seems to have a problem with that.
Well, no, but it certainly does play into the stereotype of the...
It does. It does. But do you know how many people fall right into that stereotype and love it?
Oh, I'm Irish and I fight just like the Fighting Irish.
Right. So the point is, there's no outrage that seems to be over that.
I don't think that's true necessarily.
You think there is outrage?
Well, I don't know. But
Among the Irish-American community?
I think it's a tongue-in-cheek sort of joke. Because the reason that that is what it is that, it's a stereotype that isn't as offensive. Now, that's now, by the way. But if you would go back 100 years... I don't think it would be viewed the same way. It's interesting how that's worked, because my wife's grandfather was Irish. Well, she's Irish, but he was Irish, and he was a cop in New York City. And it was that sort of thing that he didn't go to St. Patrick's Day parades. He didn't walk around with a St. Patty's hat and a four-leaf clover on his lapel. He didn't go around, drinking green beer and stuff, because he was aware of that stereotype and that Irish people in America had a very low social status at one point in our history. And that doesn't really exist anymore, thank heavens. But, it's been, we divert our efforts to put somebody in that lower class, and some group of people continues to fill it in some way. But it's true that at one point in time, that would be a stereotype that would offend Irish people. But they found a way to embrace it and say, you're darn right, I'm a fighting Irish, and I drink, and my parents are cops,
Well, now I'm very offended by that.
And I didn't mean to stereotype there, but it's one of those, I think that in particular is something that runs less risk, and it's a calculated risk.
Right.
It's not like they did something on purpose to offend other people. And again, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but I don't see a team ever taking on a mascot with the trying to give the impression to the opposing team that they're weak or whatever. It's always a sign of strength, union, and a force to be reckoned with. Now, if it also bleeds over into, you know, we're reckless, ruthless, and we're going to scalp you or something terrible like that, like a stereotype they may be trying to.
Well, but couldn't you envision that with Warrior? I mean, couldn't that be something that you could, associate with?
I could, but I remember back when that change in name happened, I was a little puzzled by, there are some that are obvious, okay?
Like Redskin.
Redskin, that's a really obvious one. Or, there was another team name that was similar that you know, Savages or something like that. You know, it obviously was not a good thing that they were trying to portray, but they were trying to show the strength in a different sort of way.
Well, here's what it comes down to. I think you have to look at each of these
or the
mascots.
The Raiders. How about that?
Right, the Raiders. Yeah,
Raiders. Yeah,
you have to look at each of these on their own. I mean, you have to look at every name individually. I mean, I don't think that you can make a blanket policy that says if a school references in some way a Native American mascot or has a Native American mascot that automatically ought to be banned because it might offend somebody, because you have to look at it on its face. And you probably, I think, accurately point out that probably the best people to ask are the people who it's portraying to see if they themselves are offended by it. But we do run into this risky scenario because there are things in our society, certainly when it comes to schools, that you are subject to. I mean, the school is part of the government, at least public schools are. So you're subject to a lot of regulation, and you have to be very careful about these types of things. And I'm not, you know, again, I'm one who's big on the First Amendment and big on freedom of speech, but you do have to be cautious and careful of other people's beliefs, especially when you're in a public setting, especially when tax dollars are going towards that organization.
Let me ask you a question, Professor Hoff. I'm going to say a phrase here, and I want your reaction. This is like a Rorschach test, except with words. And when I say this, I want you to tell me if it's a good thing or a bad thing. Ready? Politically correct. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It depends on what you mean by that.
Well, most people that use that phrase mean something bad by it, don't they?
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know that.
But
here's what I
will tell you about this whole issue, and that is that part of what we owe our younger generations is helping them understand what is and what isn't correct. If it happens to be something that, we use that term politically correct to mean it's going too far and that we're pretending that something's correct.
Fake outrage.
May not, fake outrage,
that
kind of thing.
That's what John Stewart calls fake outrage.
Right. But there is such a thing as making sure that we have standards and that the government and we who live as part of a structured and orderly government have a responsibility to make sure that we have standards that are set. And if your school's emblem is a, you know, one of those, you know, Redskins warrior chiefs with the thing of feathers and a tomahawk in his hand, what does that say to the kids from kindergarten up to 12th grade about the issue of understanding, well, for one, the plight of Americans in our country, and the fact that as recently, you know, you talk about, we were talking earlier about how there has been 300 plus years of suffering of an entire race, but, you know, talk about the Americans and how they had it bad. They still have it bad because as recently as, you know, the 1970s, we were still making movies where we had actors, they didn't trust actual, you know, Native Americans to play the role, so they'd hire somebody else and they'd paint his face red in Westerns. And, you know, they're always the bad guy. And do you know how many movies were made in the 50s and 60s about cowboys and Indians, so to speak? And you know, thousands. I mean, it was like there were B-movies. Any given Saturday, you could go see a new one, and they were just coming out like crazy, and it was all the same theme. And the theme was the white cowboys are good, and the red Indians are bad. And this is recent history, and we perpetuated that and allowed it and paid money to go to the theater for that. So some people will say, oh, you know, I remember being a kid in the 50s or 60s, and I remember seeing these emblems on my Boy Scout patch or my uniform and the full eagle feather spread on the Native American's head, and it reminds me of nostalgia and the good old days. And well, there were things about the good old days that were not that good.
Yeah,
and we still haven't done enough to make sure that, you know, we as a society, I mean, we owe our existence, you know, right now Where we're sitting right now was American territory.
Well, and I think that – but this does go to the point. I mean, when you talk about political correctness, that's often something that's talked about in the context of somebody being offended by something that someone feels they shouldn't be offended by. That's really what we're talking about here. And when you ask that question, is political correctness a good or a bad thing? Well, that totally depends on the context. I mean, there are all kinds of things that you could say, and there are people who go too far in being outraged and offended by things that perhaps they shouldn't be offended by. And we pointed out examples just in this discussion.
Well, whose job is it to decide if somebody else is going to be offended?
Well, that's the point. I mean, I'm just saying it's up to everybody's own perception of what the world is. And so when you talk about a team like the Florida State Seminoles, and I know I keep going back to it, but I'm just saying, when you talk about a team like that and you have the actual Seminole tribe who overwhelmingly supports that because they view it as an honor rather than others who might view it as offensive, well, then perhaps there is too much political correctness going on with respect to that particular situation.
Because they're not asking the group in interest,
right,
so to speak.
Right. Well, it's somebody who's saying that they're offended when the actual group who's being portrayed is not offended.
Well, and then taking it a step further, I suppose that if we imagined that the Oneida Casino was upset about calling the Oneida Casino because it has the word Oneida in it, well, I don't think they're upset about that. You know, it depends on how far you take that argument.
Exactly.
But I understand your point. But my problem is with this extremely offensive and indignant letter that the governor sent in anticipation of disappointing people that were hoping for some positive social progress in our state.
Well, with that, we do have to end the show. It's been another edition of Legal Defense with Kirk and Casey. Remember, you can join us every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 right here on 1330 WHBL. Have a wonderful weekend.